Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 61 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. My name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight is my co-host. I forgot what show I was on for a second there. Johnny Five, the human robot.
I'm mainly just belligerent, sorry.
Yeah, not so lovely here, and that's okay. J-Man, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. I can't make the blood stop, but I'm fine otherwise.
Well, that's definitely going to be a problem moving forward tonight. And Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad, what's shaking?
That's not very Bushido of you, Goemon.
It's going to be one of those nights too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Kids, ladies and gents, welcome back to Home for the Holidays, the most wonderful time of the year when we get to talk about Christmas-themed horror movies, a genre that is surprisingly deep and which, you know, every time we dig in, we find something strange and unusual. And this week, it almost seems like we punched straight through the bottom of the barrel and just dug something straight out of the ground, because this week's film, titled Bloodbeat, almost defies any kind of sensible logic, and I'm honestly kind of amazed it even exists.
It's a film that was committed to cellulite at one point. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack here. Is there?
There. So, yeah, how many?
So I did the thing where instead of watching the thing, I do something with like a similarly related title. So instead, I played the 1997 first person shooter Blood, and then played Beat Saber after that.
Jonathan,
why you do this to us, Jonathan?
Hey, someone's got to play it.
Someone's got to play the hits. Oh my goodness. Well, friends, all I can say tonight is, you know, there's only one way for us to get through this, and we're going to have to crack one open.
Can check.
Well, I don't have a can tonight. I got a frosty cold one in a bottle here. This is the Abita Brewing Pecan Ale, because this is the season for pecan beers.
Oh, very nice.
That is delightful. That is delightful. Anybody else have something they would like to share?
I have something for the class. I have a Henway Hard Cider Company Cider Donut Cider.
A donut cider?
Like, you know how if you go apple picking, a lot of places have apple cider donuts?
Ooh, yeah.
It's an apple cider donut flavored hard cider.
How is that treating you?
It's very good. I've been saving, I got it when we went apple picking. I've been saving the last one for this very occasion. It is tasty. It's not exceedingly sweet, but it's got hints of cinnamon. It's good.
J-Man, what about you?
Oh, I have this local like microbrew. It's called Pepsi.
Well, if it's bottled locally.
That is true.
I mean, it says born in the Carolinas on the damn sign. So, I mean, it must be local.
Mm-hmm. I think it's funny that South Carolina likes to post those signs everywhere, even though Pepsi was very much born in North Carolina. So fuck you, South Carolina. You don't get to claim this one.
Ah, we're getting into this again, are we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are.
I mean, anyways.
I'm not even from here, but even I know that South Carolina is superfluous.
Yes.
It's a vestigial Carolina, yes.
Yeah.
You could cut it off and not miss a thing. Where was like, oh yeah, before I was going into that, I was gonna complain about apple picking.
Oh, yes. Hit us with your best gripe here, Andy Rooney.
No, I saw somebody on Twitter the other day complaining about apple picking and how you can get apples much cheaper at the grocery store. But there's one thing that this person fails to consider, which is that the apples you buy at the grocery store are extremely old, and it's entirely a crapshoot whether or not you get a fresh apple or mealy bullshit.
Someone else picked them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you go apple picking, you're kind of going to pick apples.
Apples.
It's in the name. Like, the picking part is just as important as the apple part.
Well, I don't even so much care about the picking part. It's, to me, it's you're going straight to where the apple lives and picking it right there in the moment.
I just get apples. The Granny Smiths that are like grown in a lab. And like as big as your fucking head.
Well, yeah, those are abominations, but still, the point
they're
stands.
Delicious.
They're wonderful. They're abominations, but they're wonderful.
You get the apple straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, apple picking. Exactly. If you want a fresh apple, you pick it off the tree like a damn red-blooded American. Where was I going with this? I don't know. I'm complaining about the complainers tonight.
Well, that person is completely and 100% categorically incorrect. So, yes, it's more expensive, but the quality is higher, and also you get the experience of picking an apple with your loved ones.
Right.
I've done so much fruit picking since becoming a father. It's not even funny.
I can imagine.
Top 10 fruit picking experiences. Number one, peaches. Peach picking, a lot
of fun. Peach picking.
Blueberries, number two. Number three, apples. Number four.
Apples is a good one, yeah. Like anything that you don't have to bend over to pick up, good stuff.
Apples is solid. Blueberry was mostly solid because my daughter is blueberry bush height and did most of the picking herself.
See, that's perfect.
And I got to reap those sweet, sweet rewards. Number four, blackberries. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend going blackberry picking if you can find it. And number five, tomatoes. Because you can make a fine salsa out of tomatoes. That's my top five picking experiences. Back to you.
I would also like to submit my favorite thing about the apple orchards and the apple picking experience, as you kind of alluded to earlier, is all the other things that you get at the apple orchard, such as the apple cider slush. If you can find a place that does an apple cider slush, those are amazing.
Mm, yeah. Big fan of the eats there.
Oh, yeah.
In addition, the pig races, the jumping pillows, the hay rides, all the accoutrements.
Let's give it up for fall, everybody.
Oh, gosh. Best season. 10 out of 10.
It froze
last night, so I can actually fucking breathe. It's cool. It's going to be great as it lasts until, 2 weeks from now when it's 70 degrees again.
Yeah, buckle up, buckaroo, because apparently we're in for an unseasonably mild winter again. Thanks, global warming.
I'm going to kill myself or maybe others. I don't know. I'll check my calendar.
Well, before we hop into tonight's feature film, I do have some holiday candy that I would like to eat before the season turns and I miss my opportunity. I once again have a bag of Brock's candy corn adjacent food stuff. This is the caramel apple mellow creams.
See, that's reasonable. That's something a sensible person would
Jesus
think of.
Fucking Christ. Yeah, you have like the ones that don't sound nasty, and you're like, oh no, I'm not going to share these with Jonathan.
Well, I do still have the tailgates in my mini fridge here.
Fuck
so
you.
So be careful what you wish for, bud. But I am going to crack this bad boy open because really, we're kind of in the end game here of Home for the Holidays, and if I don't do it now, when am I going to do it? So let's just crack this open and see what we got. And immediately the smell hits me in the face. And these are big, chunky boys, too.
Educate me on a mellow cream.
A mellow cream.
Right?
A little bit. It's basically the candy corn texture, but it's a different flavor.
Like a mellow yellow cream soda.
All right.
Like if you've ever had the mellow cream pumpkins that come with candy corn.
Oh,
sometimes.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically that. It's basically that.
I know those little pumpkins.
I got the red apples and I got the green apples.
Uh-huh.
The red apples, it's mostly just a caramel flavor, to be honest. So I'm just eating straight caramel, which is fine with me.
I kind of miss those Halloween candy. It's just like I guess it's some sort of taffy. Just it's in their orange and black wrappers, and it's just like you chew on one piece of it and it takes you an hour to chew it.
Yeah, that's basically just like old peanut butter.
Yeah, that's just good because it's peanut butter.
Oh, the ones that are like in a roll, it's almost like a big wheel, but then it's wrapped not the way that you would think it would be wrapped, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Taffy.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. It's like peanut butter taffy or something like that. It's in like their orange and black wrappers with no writing on them. And
yes.
I'm sure they were all made in like 1940 and they haven't made any sense. And we're just working through the back stock. I kind of want some of those right now, though. Fuck.
So my final verdict on these caramel apple mellow creams, this is literally just straight caramel with a tinge of apple in it. And if I don't put these down, I'm going to eat the entire bag tonight.
Portion control.
So portion control. Let's stop at 4 and leave the rest for tomorrow.
Yes. Because
we have podcasts to do, and I'm sure our listeners love hearing the sound of me smacking my teeth with caramel.
A little fully throughout the entire episode.
So delicious.
A little Matt Foley.
Now, somebody tell me about what bit.
Well, here's the thing, is that you can go to Wisconsin and pick apples, but you can also get Fuji apples in Japan. So yeah, that kind of explains the movie, really.
Oh, okay. I see where you're going with this. I was a little bit bewildered at first, but I get it now. Okay.
We careened into the subject from the left flank.
You did it. You pulled a fast one on us. Bloodbeat is a movie that came out in 1982?
Yeah, 82 or 83. It's a little wishy-washy.
I don't even know where to begin with this movie. I mean, I can go through the plot, but...
So, well, here's where I want to start. Let's start with the writer-director. His name is Fabrice Ange Zeferatos, who, as far as I could tell, is a Vietnamese French immigrant who went to Canada to produce an American feature film in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And... there was a feature on the DVD. It was an interview with him where he talked about how, like, growing up, his parents were both very artistic, and his thing was that he just loved science fiction and comic books, Star Wars and Marvel comics specifically. So right away, okay, we've got another one of those guys.
So how well is this guy eating in 2022?
So with that last name, that guy's not Greek?
No, apparently not.
Okay, I figured it was like a Greek guy. Okay.
This guy must be loving the past 15 years of popular media.
Yeah, this is all for him. But
man, let's just see if I want to just pay him a couple bucks, just punch Ernest Cline in the throat. I'm good for it. I got a couple bucks.
But essentially, this guy wrote this script, had some ideas in his head that he wanted to get out, and went to Wisconsin to shoot this movie. And the short version of it, okay, I'm going to put some money where my mouth is. Who would like to try and explain this in 60 seconds?
I'll do it.
Okay.
Okay.
J-Man, I'm going to give you 60 seconds to explain the plot of this movie. Whatever you don't spend, however many seconds you do not spend, we will donate that amount to a local charity. Are you ready?
Can a local charity be my Venmo?
No, it has to be a 501 nonprofit.
All right.
Double or nothing. I'll go into.
Bradford's throwing in too, getting in the holiday spirit. I love it. Are you ready? I'm taking your silence as a yes. Here we go. Three.
Hold on. Take my silence as a no. Take my yes as a yes. Give me a second. All right. I'm ready.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, we have Dolly and Ted going home for Christmas in Wisconsin with Ted's new girlfriend, Sarah. Sarah and Ted and Dolly's mom start giving each other weird eyes, and they claim they've seen each other before. They totally swear they know each other. Sarah starts having these weird sexual-tinged dreams, and also she finds some samurai armor, but maybe she does actually find it, and then a spooky ghost samurai starts killing people, and then there's a psychic battle because the mom's psychic, and also the kids are psychic too, and Sarah and the samurai disappear. And that's the end.
Well, that's 30 seconds even, which is kind of remarkable. And you pretty much covered it. I mean, I was amazed that you got into the detail about Actually, no, I'm just amazed that any of those details actually exist, to be frank.
I mean, far be it for me to say, actually, I wanted more movie. But it's like, this was in 85 minutes. I could have used like 15 minutes of what the fuck is going on.
Or yeah, even like even just some kind of narration or a title card at the end that that explains what the fuck you just saw, and to just
there are a lot of loose ends, and I don't know.
There's a lot of loose beginnings too.
I don't know if they were intentional or subtext or what is going on.
There's just so many things about this movie that just fucking baffle me. Okay, apparently between Dolly and Sarah, they had one pair of underwear and had to split them. Because after she's clearly like wearing like a t-shirt, like a take up an underwear in the bed, Sarah is. When she finds the samurai armor, then later when she goes back in the bedroom taking a robe off, you see her full fucking ass. She's not wearing underwear anymore. And then Dolly spends the rest of the movie running around in a t-shirt and leg warmers and nothing else, basically. And it's just like in the fucking middle of the winter in Wisconsin, running around the woods wearing cowboy boots, leg warmers, a t-shirt, and a jacket. She never at one point, after the Monopoly game, she never fucking puts on pants. What the fuck is going on with this damn movie?
She should have put the jumpsuit back on. She had a pretty sweet jumpsuit when she was out hunting.
That's true, she did. I mean, it's less what the fuck's going on with the movie. What the fuck's going on with this family? I got weird vibes off of this family from the word go.
Yeah.
And I never fully understood the
yeah, just gonna thing hang going around with my adult brother not wearing pants in BD.
Yeah, like you do. I mean, it's the 80s, it's whatever. But like right away, I kind of clocked that they were going to go like the Evil Dead formula, where like a bunch of people go to a cabin in the woods that's very remote, and they get picked off one by one by some supernatural thing. Like that's generally the structure of what's going on here. But within that structure, the things that they're doing are just like nonsensical. It's hard to explain.
So there's this thread that runs behind the movie, and if can somebody please explain it to me? So Sarah is clearly like sort of meant as the vessel for the samurai ghost that kills people.
Right. Correct. Okay.
But she like shows up to the house and starts having like visions related to the room. Like at the very start, she's freaked out by the paintings that the mom makes. And then we get like the one jump scare in this movie that I hated. I don't like it. Please put it away. Where the room turns red and a baby cries for a minute.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
No, sir. I don't like it. It's like, cause Ted is explaining a story about how like somebody rented like a psychiatrist or something rented the room prior, but then suddenly moved out. And that's the last we hear of it. And then there's, like, a picture of a girl, and we're treated to, like, a couple flashbacks of, like, the girl holding the samurai sword, but they don't really expound on it at all. Like, is that supposed to be Sarah?
The only sense I can make of any of this fucking shit is, and this is pure just, like, maybe this is an explanation that makes shit work type thing. This is not based in any sort of reality whatsoever, you know what I mean?
Right.
Is if Sarah and the mom, what's her name, Cheryl?
Kathy.
If Kathy and Sarah are both reincarnations of like feuding siblings from like ancient Japan,
I guess. Okay. But then like there's that scene later where Kathy is like looking at the samurai ghost, and then they show like footage from World War II, and it's like you're back or something. Like
yeah, and there's a scene of the samurai like not like just had this dude with a painted face.
Yeah, and then no, I thought that was Sarah with a painted face.
Maybe it is.
I thought at like the end, Sarah puts on the samurai armor, basically.
Yes, basically, Sarah's been searching for a man all across Wisconsin.
And then like we have all the Buddha statues. Fuck you,
that was good.
There you go. It's bravo, bravo.
Oh my god! See that? I'm sorry, that took me a moment.
Yeah, that took a moment to sink in.
Yeah. As a thinker, I appreciated it. But it's like, see, just the conversation that y'all just kind of pulled out of thin air, it makes me think that, like, what actually happened was I sat the two of you down in front of, like, a video Rorschach test, and you're just explaining the things that you think are going on inside your own heads right now.
Because there's no rhyme or reason. Like, there's clearly the outline of a plot that is,
like,
happening, but the movie is trying to get us to a different place, but it doesn't know where it's getting us to.
The samurai clearly know each other because they're like, your powers don't work here type shit.
Yeah. But then what's going on with Kathy is like, so she's a painter, but it occurs to me that like the only thing she only paints while I'm assuming she's having migraines, and she's painting her migraines. But they're also apparently like psychic visions that she's having. And she has a weird feeling about Sarah because Sarah also has migraines and or psychic visions. And I don't know how those two connect, but also I don't know how either of those connect to the samurai costume that comes to life and kills people. There's
that mysteriously appears in a trunk in the room and disappears later.
Yes. It's almost like the movie did this on purpose. Like, it set everything up and then just extracted the one detail that would have been needed to make the whole thing make sense. And they're just going to let you try and decipher it on your own.
And I don't think it was intentional.
Yeah, it's not clever enough to make it seem like that's what they were doing.
Exactly. And this is not a movie that's trying to get you to think, but it ends up, because it's so poorly constructed or edited or whatever it is.
I did learn something from this movie.
What's that?
I learned that in 1982, like, instant ramen was common enough to be in a house in rural Wisconsin. I figured that was relatively newer than that. I mean, they called it chow mein, but, like, it was fucking, like, top ramen. You could see the damn package, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know what to make of that either, honestly.
This feels kind of like, what was the movie, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, where it feels like it's just, there's not really a set as much as they just filmed in people's houses.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for
definitely. Sure. Even just the first Silent Night, Deadly Night felt that way.
Because just all the goofy details, like all of the shit in the cabinet, and just the fact that the other dead meat couple has a fucking waterbed.
Yes.
That waterbed fascinated me to no end just by its pure existence.
Did I ever mention that I grew up with a waterbed?
No.
Yeah.
A guy who lived down the street from me in middle school had a fucking waterbed. It was just
one of my cousins psychotic. Had a waterbed growing up, yeah.
The best thing about having a waterbed in the house is you would turn off the heater when you would leave to like go on vacation or whatever. And you'd have to turn on the heater when you came back. And it took a while for the waterbed to get warmed up. And we had one in our guest room and we kept the heater off until like we knew guests were coming. And let me tell you, there is nothing better than a cold waterbed to suck every ounce of heat out of your body. If you're hot, like if you come in from a hot summer day, lay down on an unheated waterbed. Oh, it's like a heat sink. It's amazing. Best.
DIY best. Home tips from us to you.
Don't ever get a waterbed. They're terrible. I don't know.
Let me tell you about this thing. It's called the shower. It. Like, the water just comes out of the damn wall at you.
No, look, it's like you had to, like, put chemicals in it to stop mold from growing in it. And, then like, sometimes they'd spring leaks. And then, it was a mess. Yeah, I don't know why my parents ever dealt with it.
Like, you try to jump on it, and you end up, like, falling over, and you crack your damn head open on the railing around the side of it. Because there was, like, almost like a trampoline, like, border on the damn thing.
Yeah, yeah.
See, when I was a kid, I saw Edward Scissorhands, and you know there's a scene in Edward Scissorhands where he accidentally punctures a waterbed. And so the entire rest of my life, my thought was, I don't want a waterbed because what if I accidentally puncture it with scissors?
What if you accidentally have scissorhands and lay down on a waterbed?
Yes, it could happen.
It's entirely within the realm of possibility.
Well, I think it more is Joseph, like, more, what if you purposefully have scissorhands than accidentally lay on a waterbed?
Oh, man. Woulda, coulda, shoulda, I guess.
Yeah, this movie is very early 1980s.
I want to stick with this scene for a second. Uncle Pete and his wife, Chris, where he's badgering her to go make tea and orange juice while he cuddles with his dog on the bed.
That's not Uncle Pete. That's
Uncle Pete Uncle Pete gets murked outside of his truck. It's okay, some other
hunter. So who is this guy?
This is this is the guy that they were taking medicine to. Paul, I think his name is.
Paul. Okay.
So, yeah, let's, Paul. Let's run through the adult characters real quick.
Okay.
So Kathy's the mom. She lives with Gary, who is totally not her husband because she refuses to get married. But it's her boyfriend. Yeah. Her brother, the Ted and Dolly's Uncle Pete shows up after a bit. And then one of them at one point mentions that they need to take medicine to Paul, who is a hunter friend of theirs who is sick. And okay. His wife is Chris. Other than that, there's the sheriff and some local yokels, and that's it.
And the random guy that just shows up dead, and then, yeah, that's it. But this guy, I already forgot his name.
Paul. I'm pretty Paul. Sure.
This guy, Paul, is badgering his wife, Chris, for tea and orange juice while he sticks to the bed and cuddles with the dog. And it occurred to me at that moment.
It's a dog.
It's a husky. A they're all cute.
It's a husky. Very good dog.
This is a movie.
It's the dog from Husky Pup Productions.
This is a movie about how men drive women crazy.
See, until the samurai kills Chris along with, eventually, Paul. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I was like, is this a movie? Is this like an early feminist movie? Like, is the samurai ghost just gonna... Because she's like, every time the samurai ghost kills somebody, Sarah's like lying on the bed convulsing, having, you know...
Just violent sexual orgasms. Dream. Yeah, just go ahead
violent,
and say it.
Violent O's.
Yeah, at the point when Uncle Pete dies next to his car, she's sitting on the couch and just starts convulsing and then, like, looks over at the mother, then gets up. I just feel like she's gonna be like, sorry about the wet spot. She's fucking walking away or something.
Yeah. So, up until Chris gets killed in the kitchen, I was like, is the samurai ghost an early feminist icon, actually? Like, killing awful, terrible garbage men?
Yeah,
and they dispose
of that theory like immediately.
Yeah, it lasted all of 10 minutes before Chris gets murked in the kitchen. Yeah, like maybe, before Paul.
Yeah, maybe Uncle Pete sucks. I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah.
But like honestly, like that would have been an angle for this movie to take that we could grab onto and say, okay, this is about something. But without that, we're still flailing in the wind. What is this about?
Yeah,
because I think going back to the director had some ideas. He just didn't have any connective tissue because you have the idea of the samurai ghost and like some sort of reincarnation, and the fact that Sarah is very clearly like for her like the samurai's like murder is like deeply like connected to like something like sexual, basically.
So I don't know what to do with this movie, you guys.
It's baffling. It's this movie feels like something that would have ended up on MST3K if not for all the gore and some mild nudity.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of confusing because like, so I get the idea that Dolly's going to like Wisconsin, like she's going to the University of Wisconsin because she's wearing like an athletic department shirt.
Sure.
The only other college that I see mentioned is Sarah's wearing like a Georgetown University shirt. But it's like they all arrived in the car together.
It's a long drive from DC.
Yeah, and also, if I had to place their ages, like this is definitely thinking more about it than the movie did. Like it seems that like Ted is like a grad student of some sort, and Dolly is an undergrad because Dolly still acts like a kid, basically. Like she's running around under the like diving under the tree, shaking gifts and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. She's doing like the little sister bit because they're back. She's back home with her family. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but it seems to be strange if they're. It felt strange.
Yeah, you know what else is strange? The rando at sort of the beginning of the movie, in the first act of the movie, that just dies while they're hunting, completely unrelated to like. Is it unrelated? It's not a stab wound.
No, he's eviscerated or something.
Yeah, and nothing else happens with that in this movie except that Sarah is traumatized by it, and maybe that's like something. See, I'm trying so hard to give this movie credit. Like, Is that what awake like opens her chakras for like the samurai go? I don't.
Yeah, it's almost like this movie doesn't have a plot as much as it just has a vibe, basically.
Yeah.
And it very much is a vibe because like the weird sort of minimalist like Moog keyboard score is very striking. Very good.
I love the entire soundtrack to it up to the second he uses O-Fortune, and even that still has. That's not really a point against it because it's just overdone. It's 82, so I mean that predates that, I guess.
Yeah, this predates Jackass the movie by like 20 years, so we're gonna give that a pass.
The score, let's say the score, so you know stuff written for this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, chef's kiss, amazing,
wonderful.
The it's funny you mention it's more of a vibe than a plot, and. Another movie that this reminds me of, a much better movie, mind you. Have either of you seen the Japanese film House?
I have, yes, absolutely.
And it like you have a lot of scenes where the color is like reversed, and this soundtrack, and just like odd, unexplainable phenomena. It reminds me a lot of House in a lot of regards.
I could see that, yeah. Like this, the. If House is a movie about like, what if a Japanese space alien saw the Evil Dead and said I can do that too, this is very much the version of that where it's like a Vietnamese space alien saw Evil Dead and said I can do that too.
Yes,
it's very much the same kind of vibe, and the weird video effects that they blast onto the screen periodically, I don't know how to describe those because I've honestly never seen that. Done before that way, so I don't have the language to describe what that looks like.
It's hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. That awful jump scare that I don't like. Put it back in the box, please. Where the room turns red and the baby cries.
Oh yeah.
That's House to a T, and we get but that's not the only one. We get a lot of like the woods through the point of view of the samurai ghost.
Yeah, it's like
with all the alternate colors.
It's like weird proto predator kind of vision.
Yeah, and I love it, and just the way it happens, I'm just like, I'm never really sure. Like, did they intend to do this, or did they just like hit a button on the camera and don't know how to turn it off?
Did it just kind of happen? But like the one shot that still strikes me is like. It's the one that I keep using in all the GIFs on Twitter, is where the samurai opens the door and he's just glowing blue. that's great.
There's a lot of that, like, painted over glowy special effect thing going on.
Scooby-Doo villain.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is kind of like a Scooby-Doo story with more murder and less meddling kids.
So what the fuck's up with the fact that they're making a Scooby-Doo without Scooby-Doo, and they're literally doing that, like, Donald Trump impersonation tweet and calling the show Velma?
Wait, what? I know everything that you said, but I just didn't know that they were making a Scooby-Doo without Scooby-Doo. Oh, it's called Velma, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's the Donald Trump impression, literally. Like they're making a show called Velma.
Scooby doesn't really do, does he?
Scooby doesn't do.
Oh my god. That's. I don't understand, and it's a Mindy Kaling show, isn't it? It's like she's the one producing it. So
is this the one that got all the chuds upset that Velma's a lesbian, or was that a comic?
That was cartoon. This one is going to get them all riled up because neither Velma nor Shaggy are white, basically, and I think neither, and Daphne's not either.
Yeah,
that's why they're going to get riled up about this one.
Yeah, voices of Mindy Kaling. Sam Richardson, Constance Wu, and Glenn Howerton. Okay.
The only thing I have to say about it is like, literally, this is just that Donald Trump impression tweet. I have no judgment of quality on it. It's just like they made a show called Velma without Scooby Doo. They did the tweet.
Basically, yeah.
We'll put the tweet. I haven't evoked show notes in a long time, but we'll put the tweet in the show notes
because yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you have no idea what the hell John is talking about.
But yeah, we'll find that. We'll dig it up. We'll post it for you.
Short version, it's a guy doing a Donald Trump impression complaining about Scooby-Doo.
And the impression was so good, it got him a job on Saturday Night Live. Point being, like, if you're mad about Scooby-Doo in the year of our Lord 2022, go touch grass or something, dude.
For real. Or the Little Mermaid. Or whatever else.
Yeah, go touch the, like, Little Mermaid. Or, no, rather don't.
No, go touch grass.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. Please get a life.
Where's the Little Mermaid statue at? Is it in the Netherlands or Denmark?
I think it's in Denmark.
Okay, that ruins my joke, because I was going to say, you go to the Netherlands instead of just crawl up your own ass. So, Bloodbeat.
So how about that Bloodbeat, guys?
So how about that Bloodbeat?
The last kind of note that I even have on this is that apparently the cinematographer shot this in like a TV, like 4:3 ratio, because he thought they were doing it for TV. And they got like, they got 2 weeks into production when the director realized it and they couldn't stop.
Oh dear.
So that's why this film will forever be cropped for a full screen television set.
Well, that's a fun fact.
Which honestly, I can't say hurts the film at all, because it's very claustrophobic.
Mm.
I don't mind it as a stylistic choice, as a choice where they had to basically spin it as a stylistic choice by accident. But yeah, this is a heck of a thing. I don't really have many more notes on this one, other than it's just such an almost like first draft of a horror movie.
I just can't make heads or tails of the underlying elements of the plot. Do you guys have anything about like the little girl and then Sarah like psychically burns the portrait up? Is that supposed to be Kathy as a little girl? Is it supposed to be Sarah as a little girl? Is it just some little girl? Please answer my question.
Maybe. I mean, there's also a scene where like the house is shaking like violently and Kathy is screaming to presumably the ghost, where she's saying, God, what's the line?
You have no power here, or something like that.
She's like, my time isn't over yet. Leave my kids alone. It's like, what does that mean?
Oh, that's right.
Time isn't over yet. Like, does she have a time limit for the curse, or what's going on there?
Because you could also interpret that as like she's yelling at God, basically.
Yeah, kind of.
That's where I went with that one. Also, may I just say, none of the acting is particularly good, but Kathy is particularly not good.
Is especially not good.
It's so she's that's really bad, like very very bad. Sorry, Kathy. Don't quit your day job.
I don't know. Of all the actors that I noticed, especially not acting, Gary kind of stuck out to me.
Oh yeah,
especially the scene where he's like yelling at Kathy because like she's too wrapped up in her own world of painting and migraines and samurai ghosts, and he's just like, "Damn it, I'm your boyfriend, and I got needs too." poor guy.
The crazy part is looking at IMDb; like, he's the only one who's actually been in movies and other shit. Everyone else is like one or two and done, and then he's been in like nothing major, but like he's had like just random roles in like Princess Diaries and Raising Helen and shit like that. Like, he's been in other things. None of the other ones can say this.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. I kind of feel bad saying that, but
no, not that he did a good job. It's just really funny that you've not heard of any of these people because they've not been in anything. He's had a couple of bit parts, and that's the most of anybody.
Right, yeah, and like, let's look at this guy. Yeah, and even his IMDb picture, I'm pretty sure it's him from Bloodbeat. So I don't even know.
Every
dude.
Single one of these people, their IMDb picture is them from Bloodbeat. Yes.
Yep.
Everyone
so
of them
that's Bloodbeat.
So you notice how we didn't talk about Christmas at all?
It's, oh yeah, it takes place at Christmas.
Oh yeah, hey!
They're home for Christmas.
They're home for the holidays. There's a Christmas tree set up, there's Christmas lights everywhere. Not that that really factors into the visual look of the movie at all.
No.
Which is a shame, because like it's a huge slam dunk layup, and they just kind of missed it. Especially with all the flashing lights that are already in the film.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is that as good an opportunity as any to take it to the crankometer?
I think so.
Should we just go for it? I'm ready. Well, folks, welcome to the crankometer. This is our patented XY axis for rating Christmas movies. The X axis is the Christmosity scale, how Christmassy the film is. And the Y axis is the quality quotient, how good the film is. So, gentle friends, blood beat on the Christmosity scale.
Eh.
Can we even call it a value neutral? Does it waste the Christmas that it has?
Yeah, it's a bit of a missed opportunity.
So I guess this must be who's the director, Fabrice Zafiratos?
Yeah.
This must be his brother or something, Henri Zafiratos. Brother, some kind of relative. He has like producer of like six movies, and all the rest of them are like total like erotic dramas from the 60s, and then there's this.
What was that name again?
Henri H-E-N-R-I Zafiratos, same last name. He's listed as the producer.
Okay. Henri Zafiratos, I believe that's his father.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by his like IMDb history, which is just like a movie called The Nymphettes, another movie called Erotic Vacations of Stella, and then Bloodbeat.
And then finally Bloodbeat. I think the interview that I saw with Fabrice did say that like his father gave him a loan to produce this film, and he never made another movie. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, value neutral, I guess, because I mean, it's a reason for them to be in.
Yeah, people don't really come home for other holidays except for maybe Thanksgiving or a funeral or a wedding, you know.
I suppose, yeah, but I still want to maybe say a negative one because, like, you have the Christmas tree, you have the lights, you have the holiday season there.
I did like when shit in the house was going crazy, the Christmas tree shaking around was included in it. I liked that.
Okay.
That was fine.
I guess all I'm saying is, like, they have it there and they... Can you misuse it by not using it, is what I'm asking?
I'll agree with you in this case. Yeah, they should have done more with it.
It's a wasted opportunity. Maybe a negative one.
Yes.
That's what I'm feeling, yes.
Yeah, not out of misuse, but out of wasted opportunity. I'll agree with
yes.
that.
Okay. And now, the y-axis, the quality quotient. Did we even enjoy this at all? Was this a waste of 85 minutes?
I watched the whole damn thing, I'll tell you that.
On a certain level, it's so baffling, and so many movies that we watch are not good, but they're not bad enough to be interesting. At least this is something interesting, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, slowing down on the highway to look at a car wreck. Like,
exactly.
You're just fascinated by all of the things that are here and in what order, and whether or not the plot makes any sense is kind of irrelevant.
I mean, I'll rewatch this before I rewatch Christmas Shoes or the damn Christmas Dragon movie or... Like, yes. 90% of the Christmas Dog movies.
That's yeah. Totally fair. And
it's like when you go to the Outsider Art Wing in the Smithsonian American Art Museum and you look at the giant temple made out of tinfoil that one man made in his garage over the course of 40 plus years. You think to yourself, I don't know why he did this, but dang. That sure is a temple made out of tinfoil that a man made in his garage over the course of 40 years.
He's just like, I didn't know that I needed somebody to do this. I didn't know that somebody should have done this. But since it already happened, I'm kind of glad somebody did.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I'm at with this movie. I'm glad that it exists. I don't know that I'll watch it again, but I didn't hate my time with it. I was baffled.
This movie is the cinematic equivalent of the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota.
Exactly.
Jay Bowman from Red Letter Media said that he has a pipe dream of remaking this movie, and I'm really sad that it's just a pipe dream.
Oh.
See, that those guys could make this fun, but I don't know that yes. they could make it interesting. Like, the plot threads and the thematic stuff that's here, there's not enough connective tissue to make any of it make sense.
At the same time, so that gives you room to work with, because it's not like you're going to, like, oh, you know... There is. It's not like remaking Black Christmas where it's like, or like making Halloween 2 where it's like, why the fuck did you put a plot in? You didn't need one, you know. It's like there, you need something here. There's not like there's nothing here. You need something here. We don't really need to know the why and how everything, but you need to just have something make sense, because it's just like, surprise, they're both reincarnated ancient evil spirits. That's all you need to go off of. Like, they're rivals, they're reincarnations of like rival evil spirits. You don't really need an explanation for that. You just need to know that it is, and that would make everything make sense, you know?
Yeah, something. Just give us something to hang our hats on here, is all we're really asking.
Like, there's plenty of room without over-explaining.
I'm not asking for the art to explain itself, but I am asking for it to throw us a bone.
Yeah, I'm not asking for it to explain itself. I'm asking you to say what the fuck it is.
Yeah. In so many words.
I think, like, I guess what I'm talking about is with Halloween 2. Like, Halloween 2 goes overboard with trying to give you a reason for Michael Myers to do shit, when Halloween is just like, nah, he's evil. He sucks. That's all the reason you need, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of like, yeah, we don't really need to know why any of this shit is, but we need to know what this shit is.
So I guess then the flip side of that is, if this movie had made money and they made a Bloodbeat 2, would they have explained anything further?
I think if you made Bloodbeat 2, it would just be like Koyaanis Katsi.
Fabrice Severados walked into an executive's office one day and he wrote Bloodbeat on the whiteboard, and then he wrote an S at the end of it. And then he drew a dollar sign.
The S is a dollar sign.
Yeah. Like the stupid story about how James Cameron pitched Aliens. That's true, apparently. Oh my god. So yeah, quality quotient. I want to give this a, jeez, guys, I don't know.
Like, all this, I know is that James Cameron is probably the guy I have the most conflicted feelings about in terms of movie makers.
My feeling on James Cameron is, don't ever bet against him, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I want him to like, I want him to stop giving a shit about Avatar because he's the only one that does, but he also has enough like clout to make other people think they do. I just want him to go find cool shit at the bottom of the ocean, because what the fuck's down there?
Right?
All I want is The Abyss on 4K, and I'm never going to get that if he keeps making fucking Avatar movies.
Yeah, I want him to get back in that damn submarine and go find what the fuck's down there. There's something down there. We don't know. Allegedly, we know more about space than we do about the bottom of the ocean. Like, let's fucking fix that.
He could just be the next Jacques Cousteau, basically, if he wanted to. But no, we have to have blue alien time.
So, a number. Give us a number for this. I'm going to say a 1, a positive 1, because at least we're getting some kind of like weird sideshow enthusiasm out of this, but I can't say in any good conscience that it's good.
No, it's not good, but it's interesting. Yeah. And for that, I think it gets a 1.
I'll give it a 1. Yes, I would say, if you have 85 minutes to burn and for whatever reason you don't want to just play a couple of rounds of Vampire Survivors, hey.
If you're a weirdo like us and you've been listening to us for this long, then you probably are the kind of person who would want to watch Bloodbeat. And for that, I salute you. It's on Tubi. Go check it out. And for everybody else, if you're just here for a Christmas movie good time, go watch Elf again, I guess, because you're not going to get it here.
Fuck that. Watch Gremlins.
Yeah, if you want a Christmas horror movie good time, Gremlins is right there.
And Gremlins is always there.
It will never steer you wrong.
Man, I want to watch Gremlins now.
But hey, guess what, folks? We have decided off podcast that Home for the Horror Days doesn't have to end here, because I think we've decided to go into extra innings. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong.
So next time on the show, I'm going to go ahead and call our shot. We're definitely covering Santa Jaws. We've been teasing it for a couple of years now. I've been wanting to do this. Now that Bloodbeat's gotten out of my system, I'm ready for Santa Jaws. This is the kind of schlock that I think people expect us to do on this podcast, and we're finally going to do it, and I'm so excited.
All right. All I'll say is,
people what they want.
Robert Vince, you got 2 weeks. What do you got, buddy?
And speaking of, like, you know, future selections, I would like to bring to your attention a film that I just discovered the other day titled A Doggone Christmas, which comes to us from a gentleman named Jim Wynorski, a filmmaker who, among other things, has directed Chopping Mall and The Lost Empire and Beastmaster 2, but also such cinematic classics as Legend of the Naked Ghost, Attack of the 50-Foot Cam Girl, Busty Coheads versus Lusty Cheerleaders, Dino Croc versus Super Gator, Busty Cops Go Hawaiian, The Hills Have Thighs, and Invasion of the Hottie Snatchers. This gentleman has gone from like producing 80s horror schlock that's, you know, kind of respectable to producing straight up Skinamax nonsense, and then finally dipped into like a couple of kids' Christmas movies.
Because why not?
I mean,
why
that not? Seems to be the trajectory, because I'm looking at Robert Vince's thing now. In 1993, he makes Tomcat Dangerous Desires, which is exactly what it sounds like, and it stars Richard Grieco. And then go to 97, and he makes Air Bud.
Yep, yep.
Cats and dogs.
Sounds about right, everybody. So yeah, look for A Doggone Christmas. Maybe next year, when we get around to the Dog Days of Summer, we'll cover that one. Who knows? But until then, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Christmas Creeps, unless you guys have anything else that we need to cover real quick.
Oh, I see what happened. I'm going to go ahead and complain about this now. What happened with the Dog Farm movies is that Robert Vince decided to get into the game of making TV shows instead. Because since 2019, he's only made TV shows. Pup Academy, WrestleManiac, Scaredy Cats, Super Pups with a Z on the end, and then Phantom Dogs.
Also with a Z on the end?
No, only Super Pups has a Z on the end.
Okay.
Wait, hang on.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
Wait a minute. WrestleManiac?
Yes, I guess it's a sequel to Wrestle Madness, which was that him as well?
It's a TV series sequel to Wrestle Madness? Oh my god.
It must be.
I hate it. Thanks, everybody. I hate it. I had to watch Wrestle Madness for a film review column one time, and it's genuinely one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
I mean, they got an angry letter from WWE about calling their movie WrestleMania, and they didn't let it stop them. That's all you need to know about these assholes.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were just like, get the thesaurus. We can work this out.
Oh boy. Well, folks, that's gonna do it for this episode of Christmas Creeps. Thank you so much for listening to this nonsense train as it pulls into the station. If you'd like to get at us on the internet anyway you'd like, we're on Twitter at I keep doing the other show.
Yeah, we're you can go to @OSTParty, and then you can click on Joe's thing, and then it'll eventually lead you at Christmas Creeps.
It's in his profile text.
Yeah, that'll work. No, you can tweet at us at Christmas Creeps. You can find us on Facebook at Christmas Creeps. We're also on YouTube and Apple Podcasts. Anywhere you get podcasts, you know, go find us and leave us a star rating and a review. We would love you and appreciate you. From here till doomsday. But until then, until next time, folks, I've been Joseph Wade for Christmas Creeps.
I'm Bradford.
I'm Johnny Five, the Human Robot. Go buy and play Vampire Survivors on Steam. You should have bought it yesterday when the price was lower, but you should buy it now. It is a good, fun game, and it's like $4.
Yeah, it was like $1 before, but it's still $4 of a good time. Good stuff.
I have played 102 hours off of my $2 purchase.
Goodness gracious.
Jeez, and I'm still not done with the fucking game either.
Oh boy, good night, everybody.
Good night.